This episode is brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Harness powerful crop solutions using technology derived from nature. Products from the Acceleron BioAg brand are bioenhancers, primarily containing live microbial organisms. The products help promote increased nutrient and water availability for better yield potential. Acceleron BioAg product offerings are available for canola, wheat, corn, soybean, pulses, and more. Visit AcceleronBioAg.ca for product information and to view BioAdvantage trial results from growers like you. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Manitoba Cooperator Editor Gord Gilmore. We're on location this week at Ag Days in Brandon. It's the traditional start to the province's agriculture year, and so far it's been a packed house. On this show, we'll have a report from Alan Dawson about an Alberta farmer who delivered a stern message on Clubroop to the Manitoba growers who gathered to hear him speak. Later in the program, we'll talk to Cooperator Markets columnist David Derwin. We'll also be joined by Cereals Canada President Cam Dahl and Canadian International Grains Institute CEO Joanne Booth. We'll also be speaking to reporter Alexis Stockford about a new push to streamline dryer certification in the province, a story she's championed over the past several months. But up first, we're speaking by telephone to Cooperator reporter Lorraine Stevenson, who's been following the big national story this week, the release of the latest and vastly altered version of Canada's Food Guide. Lorraine, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Gord.
So, how does the new guide compare with the old guide?
It's a very different guide than all the others we've had, and it has an explicit endorsement of the plant-based diet. So, it now eliminates the famous four food groups and replaces them with three groupings per se, including fruits and vegetables, whole grains and proteins. And in the protein category, there are both plant-based proteins housed alongside milk and dairy and eggs. The rainbow is gone, and that's been replaced with a dinner plate. That's showing half of that plate covered by vegetables and fruits, and the other two quarters of that plate with whole grains, and then protein foods. So some lentils and chickpeas, some tofu and fish, three small cubes of red meat, three chicken, and a wedge of a hard-boiled egg. The new guide also has a number of dietary messages around sort of consumer behavior and social and even cultural issues. It talks about cooking at home, eating with others, being mindful while you eat, using food labels, and it does say to avoid processed and prepared foods that are high in sugar and salt and saturated fat, not consume these regularly. So overall, the new direction of the updated food guide has health experts and many organizations lining up to endorse it. And it's been pointed out that basically the food guide catches up with guides around the world that also eliminated food groups and offer more broad dietary guidance that goes just beyond nutritional advice.
So it is a big shift for us here in Canada, but it seems to be sort of following the trend line globally, is what you're saying.
True.
Yeah. So that does sound like a big change. My question, though, is like, how influential is the food guide really? I saw a lot of stuff in sort of the lead up to the guide being released, where they were talking to consumers, and the consumers are saying, "Well, no, I don't really pay much attention to it." So, what's your take on how influential this guide is?
Well, it is an important document, and its messages about diet nutrition are far-reaching. Teachers use the guide in their classrooms. Health professionals use it to develop eating plans in institutions like hospitals and daycares. It is a basis for setting public policy around food and diet. But again, if your question is, do you and I follow the recommendations of a government document when deciding what to eat? My answer to that would be no. A lot of things influence what we choose to eat, like taste and convenience and price and availability. But yeah, the food guide is something we will be paying attention to, and certainly people are looking for healthy eating guidance, so it will influence people's choices.
And now, whenever we start talking about consumer preferences or consumer choices changing, we know that that's going to have an impact on the agriculture industry. What's the industry reaction been to this new guide?
Well, it was widely expected that the guide would recommend more protein-rich foods be eaten derived from plants. So no one's especially surprised by that. But again, there's not much dairy or meat in this new guide, and that has those commodity producers understandably concerned. It's important to point out there's no message discouraging Canadians from drinking milk. And in fact, the guide acknowledges that lower fat milk is part of a healthy diet. However, Dairy Farmers of Canada says what it remains concerned about is that the food guide's emphasis is on lower fat products, and they point to scientific evidence supporting a broader range of fat content in dairy products than what the food guide endorses. The new food guide also continues to acknowledge that lean red meat is a nutrient-rich protein source. There again, both the beef and pork industries issued statements yesterday when the food guide was rolled out, saying plant and animal proteins are not equivalent, and their hope is that this new guide will not be interpreted by Canadians to remove red meat entirely from their diets. So I describe the industry reaction as measured, careful, obviously a whole lot of thinking going into how animal protein foods will coexist with plant-based and how to position their protein-specific attributes in the marketplace.
So do we know or have any sense then about what impact this is likely to have on Canadian agriculture as a whole?
Well, that's what's going to be so interesting to watch. Certainly this is good news for plant protein farmers, such as those growing pulses and vegetable producers, of course. We're seeing expanding plant protein processing here in Manitoba. Same day as the guide was developed, or pardon me, rolled out, the province has announced a new protein, a sustainable protein strategy for both plant and animal producers. We know that the processing industry and ingredient supply companies are paying very close attention to demand for plant-based food products. So you're seeing companies like Maple Leaf and Tyson's, etc., all getting into plant-based alternatives. As for the broader implications for agriculture, there's others who would say revising a food guide does not reform a food system, and that government's next job is to start looking at the bigger picture and the links between overall societal health and environmental sustainability, and thinking about diet and health from that broader perspective. So I think some of the questions that are going to be asked are going forward are how do we continue to produce the food that food guides recommend we eat, and how do we do that in ways that meet other national sustainability goals, particularly in face of climate change challenges. And by the way, other countries have very explicitly linked their recommendations for diet and human health with environmental sustainability in their food guides. So maybe the next go-round and the next revision to the Canada Food Guide will be catching up on that front as well.
So to me then, this sounds like the start of the conversation, not the end of it.
Very much so.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share this with us, Lorraine.
You're welcome.
You're listening to a special edition of Between the Rows on location in Brandon, Manitoba at Ag Days. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Later in the show, we'll be speaking to Manitoba Cooperator markets columnist David Derwin. We'll also talk to Cereals Canada President Cam Dahl and SIGI CEO Joanne Booth about international wheat markets. We'll also be speaking to Alexis Stockford about how new certification rules for grain dryers in Manitoba are coming into play. But first, Manitoba Cooperator reporter Alan Dawson filed this report after speaking to Westlock, Alberta producer John Gilley, who farms in the heart of the Club Root Zone.
So John, what's your main message to Manitoba farmers about Club Root?
Main message is not to do what Alberta's been doing and get ahead of the curve. Spore loads are low here for Club Root, and you need to keep it that way. Spore loads have got out of hand in Alberta for a number of reasons, and Manitoba farmers have the chance to keep those spore loads low and not let Club Root control their farm.
You talked a little bit about the stigma of Club Root in Alberta and how that's been a detriment, I guess, to getting on top of it.
Yeah, definitely been a big stigma. Nobody wants to talk about it. Try to find a club or a farmer that'll admit that he has Club Root is pretty few and far between. A lot of them are afraid what the restrictions they'll get put on by their county, because Club Root is in the Pest Act in Alberta. So everybody's a little worried about that, worried about what the price of their land is going to do. And they really don't need to worry about that. In our area, land is selling for the same price. It doesn't matter if it has Club Root or doesn't have Club Root. And the way to get ahead and actually resolve your problem is to communicate that you have the problem, find help, learn how to deal with it.
You were talking about how there are things you know now that you wish you knew then, and I guess you can sort of tell Manitoba farmers that, and you've talked, you just mentioned a couple of them, but maybe I guess there's other things like rotation.
Yeah, there's been so much new Club Root research now. Like back when I got it, it was you had to have a four-year rotation, and that just didn't seem economically feasible to me. But new research now has shown that over 90% of the spores die off within 3 years. So you can use a 1-in-3 rotation, which has been a huge problem in Alberta because we don't have a lot of crops that we can grow, especially in the central to northern parts. I think you have a few more options here in Manitoba. But new research. I'm very envious of Manitoba farmers because they're just coming into this problem and they have very low spore loads, and that's the time to deal with it and you can actually make a difference. Don't wait and let it get into the situation that we have in Alberta.
So I think we've got some low levels in a lot of fields, so I guess scouting is important to get out there and get a handle on what kind of spore levels you have.
For sure, yeah, scouting is key. It's like I said in the presentation, it's a lot like a human disease. The earlier you can detect it, the easier or more success you're going to have dealing with it. You want to get out there with a Club Root resistant variety and stop the disease from propagating. You want to do a lot of scouting so you can find it. Get that rotation up to at least a 3-year rotation, maybe longer if you have high spore loads. Clean your equipment off so that you're not spreading it from field to field or from field onto the road so your neighbor picks it up. Any kind of oil field or utility companies come on, make sure they're sanitizing before they come in so they don't bring you any spores, and also make sure that they sanitize on their way out so they're not taking any spores off your land and taking it into the neighbors.
That was Alan Dawson speaking to Westlock, Alberta farmer John Gilley, Club Root Management. You're listening to a special edition of Between the Rows from On Location at Ag Days in Brandon, Manitoba. Later in the show, we'll speak to Cam Dahl of Cereals Canada and Siggy's Joanne Booth about the ins and outs of global wheat markets. We'll also talk to PI Financial's David Derman, who writes about the markets for the Manitoba Cooperator. Up first is Alexis Stockford, who's been following a story for the past few months on the difficulty of getting a grain dryer up and running in Manitoba and how it's been far harder than in other provinces. Amid a spate of agriculture policy announcements yesterday at the show, the province said it's streamlining the process. Alexis, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Gord. Great to be here.
So can you lead us through what the issues have been and how this whole thing's flared up this last fall?
Well, it's certainly not a new issue, and I'm not sure that any farmer that's been in Manitoba in the last number of years is surprised that this has been an issue. But you're right, this fall it really did flare up, mostly because of the weather conditions, where we hit a very cold, very wet patch, sort of in a very critical part of harvest, and a lot of guys found themselves kind of mired in the field, and there were no tractors rolling. And so all of a sudden, grain dryers became a very critical thing, or something that they were looking at very closely. And a lot of people then went and thought, I'll just go get a used grain dryer, kind of not knowing the red tape that was awaiting them. And they very quickly grew frustrated with that process. And so that kind of translated into a lot of discussion and a lot of criticism that this process was very unwieldy and complex and hard to understand.
So what's the province doing about it now to address this situation?
So yesterday, the province announced that they were going to take kind of a three-pronged approach to this to try and streamline this process and kind of address some of these criticisms. And I spoke to Minister Blaine Peterson about this, and this is what he had to say.
First of all, there's three main components here. First of all, we are going to have a central booking process coordinated with Manitoba Hydro, because in any dryer installation, you also have Manitoba Hydro involved, whether it's the hydro side or whether it's natural gas in some of those installations. So we'll have a coordinated booking process with them. We'll also, during the harvest season, so from August 15th to December 31st, we will have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week inspection hotline, so that if there is a particular issue with setting up a dryer, or, you know, in terms of things like if there's a grain dryer fire that needs to be reinspected or something like that, we'll have this 24-hour line up and running so that we can respond very quickly to any issues that arise. And thirdly, and probably the most visible thing about this, is we're going to harmonize our installation requirements with Saskatchewan. There's been a lot of talk about how the two different provinces were treating the regulations, and so we're going to make sure that we're harmonized with the way Saskatchewan does their dryer inspections and certifications.
So one of the ongoing complaints, as I understand it, is farmers thought they couldn't get a straight answer out of the office of the fire commissioner. So how is that going to change?
Yeah, and you're right. That's a complaint that I heard both from equipment dealers and from farmers, that they were basically complaining that in some cases that it seemed very up for interpretation in terms of what the inspector would say and what they wouldn't say. Or that, as one equipment dealer relayed to me, that there didn't seem to be a lot of interaction between the inspector and the producer and the equipment dealer in the lead up to the inspection. And the result of that was, of course, that some problems that could have been caught in the process of setting the dryer up were not caught until inspection day, and then they faced the delay and the cost of going back and redoing some of that. And so that was certainly a concern that I heard from a number of farmers. And this is what Mr. Peterson had to say about that.
This gets instituted right away, and it will be ready for when the main season comes for dryer installation, which is not in January, but it's coming up here.
Provincial Agriculture Minister Ralph Eichler also weighed in on the topic. What did he have to say?
He basically echoed a lot of what Minister Peterson had to say. He acknowledged some of the challenges that the province has heard from producers. And you're right, he addressed that in his Ag Days comments this week. And here's just a little clip from an interview that I had with him on the topic.
We've heard loud and clear from our farm families that changes need to be made. I'm encouraging the farm families to take advantage of this, you know, during the off season, to plan to get these dryers installed, get them inspected. But having said that, we know that everybody's busy and finances come at a certain time when you need to move forward as well. But at the end of the day, we're trying to streamline this, make it as safe as effective as we possibly can, not only for the producers, but also the timeliness to get them put in and installed.
That's great. Thanks a lot for filling us in on this, Alexis.
Thanks for having me, Gord.
That was the Manitoba Cooperator's Alexis Stockford. You're listening to Between the Rows, on location at Ag Days in Brandon, Manitoba. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We'll wrap the show up shortly with PI Financial Portfolio Manager and Manitoba Cooperator Markets columnist David Derwin. But up first is Cereals Canada's Cam Dahl and Siggy's Joanne Booth, who were part of a panel discussion on global wheat markets. I caught up with them after their session. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
So you were both participants in a panel discussion that looked at the international wheat markets, the sort of the future of the wheat sector, that sort of thing. I'll start with you, Cam. What are the challenges you see the farmers and the sector facing, and what can be done about some of these challenges?
I think some of the biggest challenges are that increased scrutiny of our product in international marketplaces for things like pesticide residues, DON from Fusarium or ochratoxin A, a fungal storage issue. And countries can test down to parts per trillion, and sometimes their responses aren't necessarily based on science, but a potential block to trade. So I think my message is what happens on the farm really matters in international marketplaces. And farmers do have an impact on our ability to access markets. So things like ensuring we follow the labels for all products, including things like glyphosate, ensuring we have good storage practices to minimize storage issues, ensuring that we're doing whatever we can to minimize the impact of fusarium. These all really do have a result on international markets.
And Joanne, more or less the same question to you. What are you seeing? You're out there, you're talking to customers internationally. They're coming to Winnipeg to talk to you folks. What are you hearing from them about some of these same topics? Where do you see the future and some of the issues as?
We look at things and are talking to customers from the quality point of view. And so the quality of the different classes of wheat that we produce in Canada is really important to customers. And wheat is really complicated. And if you take a look at CWRS and the issues that we had in terms of gluten strength about 5-7 years ago, what's happened through the Canadian Grain Commission in terms of the reclassification of some of the varieties that didn't meet those specifications has had an impact for the end-use customer. So they are seeing the quality that they want. They are cautioning us to stay within the upper and lower limits that we have right now, and don't get too weak, don't get too strong, and that is really important. So from the quality perspective, it's really important that we have the system that we do with the varieties coming through a quality testing from the breeders all the way through the classification system from the Canadian Grain Commission, and then the commitment from the entire value chain in terms of keeping wheat clean and consistent and making sure that quality is there.
One of the things I'm sure we've all heard a lot over the years is talk about our brand in the international marketplace, and I think that we would all agree that it's a pretty impressive one. It's well regarded globally. What do we do then to maintain that into the future?
Well, Joanne has touched really on what that brand in is. It's clean, consistent quality. That's not something we invented. That's something that customers really told us of what Canadian wheat is known for around the world. And I think the clean and consistent, we need to ensure that we pay attention again to things like pesticide residues, ensuring that what we say we deliver, we actually deliver when it comes to things like varieties going into the system. So if we say we're delivering a CWRS, that it actually is a CWRS, that we followed all the label instructions for pesticides. That's really how we deliver on that clean promise. Consistent things like ensuring that we have the rail capacity to deliver this growing product, and the recent rail legislation is a real help for that, and that's something that has been well received by customers abroad. So each part of those brand, a clean, consistent quality is critically important. And Joanne has touched on the quality aspect, and we really are seeing that. The demand for Canadian wheat is staying strong. If you look at, for example, the exports of U.S. Hard red winter or Australian wheat, even as the growth in the Black Sea has come onto international markets, the U.S. and Australia exports have fallen quite dramatically. Where Canada continues to grow, not at a large pace, but we are continuing to increase our exports, and that's because of our quality, and we're not selling the same level of quality as the Black Sea countries are, and that's resulted in us keeping our markets, and we need to stay with that.
And Joanne, we had heard during the conversation at the panel about some moves that some of these competitor countries like the Black Sea regions were making to move upscale a little bit. How real is that threat in your sense?
So if you take a look at what the Black Sea, Russia-Ukraine area produces now, they're in usually the 100 million ton range, whereas Canada, you know, produced 27 million tons, exported, you know, between 16 to 18. And so they're putting around 50 million tons onto the market. And what differentiates us is that we have this quality, this strength and elasticity in the wheat that makes it perfect for bringing up the quality of other products. So as this production has increased, customers have said, we have to maintain CWRS within the blend. And so I think we've been very well served by the industry that has maintained that quality in terms of the recommendations and the class system. And we have to ensure that we keep that. So we had a team that went into Russia and Ukraine along with Cereals Canada and the Alberta Wheat Commission to take a look at what are their transportation systems, production, and it was primarily focused though on determining what their quality is at and what they're breeding for. And in a nutshell, essentially, they have a long ways to go in terms of their breeding program. And spring wheat is about 30% of their production. So, you know, there's still a large amount of spring wheat going onto the market. And they are improving in terms of their cleanliness, though, because of the transportation systems, better infrastructure, et cetera. And they're getting to be more consistent. But Canadian wheat just blows the competition out of the water in terms of those characteristics right now. And so the commitment that everybody has, I mean, farmers don't grow it. We have nothing, right? It starts with the farmer. And moving all the way through the system, everybody's responsible for that, for their part in the chain.
And actually, that's a great last question for me then, as I'd like you to both comment a bit on what on the farm level can be done to protect this reputation for quality that we have. And you've alluded to some of the issues with some of the products that are being used, that kind of thing. I'm very curious if you can kind of illuminate me a little bit on what you think the balance will be between the sort of the agronomic reality of farmers who don't want to pull the swather back out. In fact, they'd love to park it for a couple more crops versus the market reality that we can't afford to be using this product as something that's not labeled for.
Well, I think that's a really good question. And you know, the market reality is that if products are used off-label and that results in residues going into the international marketplace, our customers are going to tell us you can't use it. And so if products are used off the label and not according to label directions, the market is going to take those products out of the toolbox. And so we know that there are significant benefits coming from modern agriculture. That's a sustainability and long-term profitability benefits as well as that short-term profitability on the farm. We need to keep that because that's how we're competitive internationally. And the way we keep that is knowing what's on the label and rigorously following it.
And Joanne, if there was sort of one thing you could tell farmers you'd like to see them sort of mind the store on, what would it be?
Storage practices, maintaining proper moisture in the bins. Customers will always tell us that that they would like to see Canadian wheat drier. Well, I mean, we'd love to be able to give them that. I mean, but in terms of proper storage practices on the farm, it goes towards that, so you don't get the development of mycotoxins, of mold and fungi within the grain. And so it's the quality is there, and we're meeting tolerances for some of the storage problems that we might have. I just want to make one other comment, though, in terms of what farmers do and why they're doing what's important in terms of maintaining the quality, is that each of the commissions across Western Canada have formed a group that funds the public breeders at Agriculture and Ag-Food Canada, Crop Development Centre, etc. And they're using their levy dollars, essentially, from farmers to fund that breeding system. And that breeding system is key for us in terms of maintaining quality, but also clearly in terms of agronomic characteristics. Yield has got to be most important for farmers. Quality has got to be most important for customers. But it's other things too. It's the maturity of the varieties. It's the height. You know, you talk about straight cut. You know, you want a shorter variety essentially for that. And so maybe it's not specific to a farm, but just a comment that paying the levy and supporting their breeding system so that they have opportunities is really, really important.
And Cam, I see you nodding along on that.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely that research and innovation is our competitive advantage today. And as we see, the Black Sea is just that one example of growth in our competitors, and the way that we compete today and the way we'll compete in the future is research and innovation.
That was Cam Dahl, President of Cereals Canada, and Joanne Booth of SIGI, filling us in on opportunities and challenges in the international wheat markets. Now, last but not least, we're joined by PI Financial Portfolio Manager and Manitoba Cooperator Markets columnist David Derwin, who spoke to us after his presentation. David, you made a very interesting presentation earlier today where you spoke about ways to increase profitability. One of your first recommendations was to use a full suite of tools, including some that aren't common in Western Canada, such as options and futures contracts. What can you tell us about the adoption of these tools elsewhere, how our region compares, and why there might be a difference?
Yeah, I think one of the main things that we're seeing is it's slowly but surely gaining awareness and understanding, okay? And certainly that's the case with, I would say, perhaps the younger generation of farmers, where they may have been exposed to some of these issues in their ag schools. Perhaps they've just done some of their own learning. There's a lot of information online. But having said that, some of the older farmers that I work with, too, they're realizing that they may have done it in the past and maybe not quite right, so they want to find a better way to do that. And it's slowly but surely improving. Compared to the States, though, every study I've seen or report I've seen tends to show that the U.S. farmers have an adoption rate of maybe about 30-35%. Part of that is because you've got the futures exchanges there. There's a lot of brokerage firms there. And here in Canada, you had the wheat board, which did do a lot of the marketing for the growers. So it didn't really encourage them to have to look at other tools and outlets. But slowly but surely, we're changing, and it's improving. I think it's important to have. It's another tool in the toolbox.
You also suggested that farmers pay attention to some of these tools, specifically the futures market, even if they don't necessarily intend to use them. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, I think it's important to use them. But there are some that, for various reasons, they're not going to look at them. But I think it's important to understand what it means, because the futures prices will still drive our cash prices. And to understand that relationship, how cheap or expensive is that cash bid compared to where futures are? What's that history? What's that the comparison over time? Because maybe that bid from the elevator isn't as good as you think, or maybe it's a really good bid and you want to be more proactive and aggressive. So you got to follow the futures anyways, because it's going to impact your cash price.
Another key topic you touched on was the importance of capturing opportunities, and the one that you really kind of flagged on was things like storage spreads. Tell us a bit about the why and the how of that. How do you go about sort of identifying and capturing these?
Yeah, we're seeing more and more storage infrastructure being built across the prairies, which gives producers a lot more operational flexibility and advantages. But at the same time, you want to be able to also monetarily benefit from that storage that you've built. And really, the only way you can do that is to lock in some type of price or hedge some type of price into the future, okay? Whether that's through a deferred delivery contract, right? You store the grain until then, but it's in your bin, and at least you've captured that higher price that's available down the road, or using futures or options. Because if you don't actually protect that price, could very well be that the 980 soybean price that's out there for delivery in 6 months comes down to 920 or 930, the current cash prices, if you don't actually lock that in. So you have to some way have a mechanism to capture that future price, that forward price, if you're going to keep it in the bins and really benefit from it.
Another, just speaking of using some of these tools, another, and hedges in particular, one of the things you commented on was that there were a lot of things that farmers could hedge. There were the familiar ones. There was canola, there was wheat, there was soybeans, there was corn. But you also talked about some non-traditional things that folks could be hedging, interest rates, currency, that sort of thing. What can you tell us then about why that's important, and how, more importantly, can farmers hedge them?
The currency is an important one, and you can use futures and options just like you would on grain or cattle, but currency is really important because it affects all your top-line revenue. 100 cent of your dollars on the production is going to be impacted by the currency, right? Either very directly or indirectly, but in a global market, everything is affected by what the U.S. dollar does and what global trade does. So currency is a very important one to hedge because it affects everything. Interest rate. You can use options and futures as well to hedge interest rates. And you know, while maybe not the biggest cost component of a farm operation, it's when rates start going up and people look at it, or they've got a lot of floating rate debt on the books, it's worthwhile looking at what the alternatives are. And sometimes you can just go in and convert a floating rate to a locked in. But other times I'm finding that it might be more efficient and maybe cheaper to just use the futures markets to hedge both your floating rate interest rates or your longer term interest rates. Oil's another one that comes up regularly because there are a lot of futures and option contracts on fuel products. And given fuel can be another bigger component of the cost structure, it makes sense to look at it. It's just another way to hedge both your revenue side of the equation, but also the cost side too.
So you're sketching a picture of a toolbox that you can fill up pretty full if you want, but these are not sort of simple things to understand. What can farmers do to educate themselves on these tools, how to use them, where to use them? Are there resources out there you would recommend, that sort of thing?
There are a lot of resources, of course, online. A great place to go is to the commodity exchange themselves, like CME Group. Which formerly known as Chicago Mercantile Exchange, has a lot of really good online resources, from guidelines and booklets to videos that they've created that really help you get that understanding of how these tools work. They have a lot of price quotes and a lot of data. They have charts, so it at least gets you into that. If you want to take a bigger step, I had a client just ask me, what can I do to really understand this better over the course of the winter here, as I've just opened up an account with you and I want to also be very familiar with it. And there are places, like I used to be an online instructor for Lethbridge College, and they have an online course, part of their agri-business risk management program. 1 month sessions, it's all online, a couple maybe short booklets to read, some online courses and online quizzes, and then maybe a final. But it just lets you practice and put some of that in place. So those are online is really the way to go. Search it out because they're out there.
And just while we have you here, as you do follow the markets very closely, what is catching your eye in the markets right now, and what are you going to be watching as the winter progresses?
Yeah, definitely got to follow the markets closely, and doesn't mean you're always active in them, but you got to keep an eye on it. And I mean, I think of some of the conversations I've had in the past couple of weeks, and you know, new crop canola, $500 a ton. Not bad. That's kind of where it's been for the past couple of years. So nothing wrong with that price. So maybe you start looking a little bit at that. Wheat has been near the low end of the range and sideways. Nothing too compelling there. Maybe you get some good cash bids. New crop soybeans, if we could get back to $10 a bushel where it was before the trade issues happened last summer, again, not a bad level. Canadian dollar is one, though, because we have had a drop, well, since maybe, what, 10 months ago, from 82 cents to where we now are at 75. That's kind of a low level. So looking at the Canadian dollar is something that could be, in the short term, a place to start hedging, right? We've got a low level. Let's capture some of that and help protect the basis a little bit.
That was PI Financial's David Derwin joining Between the Rows on location from Ag Days. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, saying so long, and we hope that you'll join us again next week.
Today's program was brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Acceleron BioAg products harness the powerful technology of nature to release soil-bound nutrients, helping promote nutrient availability at the plant root. Accelerate crop performance with powerful bioenhancers aimed at promoting nutrient and water uptake and improved yield potential. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.